For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. Voters in Alabama are deciding whether Republican Roy Moore or Democrat Doug Jones should represent them in the U.S. Senate in a special election. The poll has become a referendum on U.S. President Donald Trump's political agenda and on how men treat women in the United States. Multiple women have accused Roy Moore of touching them inappropriately as teenagers, with U.S. President Donald Trump facing similar allegations. But the American president has attacked a U.S. senator on Twitter, calling her a lightweight. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is standing by her call that the allegations against President Trump should be fully investigated.
It's the right thing to do, and these allegations should be investigated. They should be investigated thoroughly. That is the right thing to do, and I am urging them to do that, and as should their constituents.
The man suspected of carrying out an attempted bombing in New York City has been charged with terrorism offenses. Al-Qaeda Ullah was one of four people injured when a device strapped to his own body exploded. From New York City, our correspondent William Denslow reports.
A tweet from the New York Police Department states that Al-Qaeda Ullah has been charged with making a terrorist threat, supporting an act of terrorism, and possessing a weapon. The Bangladeshi immigrant is believed to be in serious condition after a device exploded in an underground passageway by the Port Authority bus terminal. Authorities in Bangladesh say he doesn't have a criminal record, and officials in the US have announced that Ullah wasn't on their radar. US media are reporting that he may have been inspired by the so-called Islamic State. Federal charges may also follow. William Denslow, New York.
French President Emmanuel Macron believes the U.S. must return to the Paris Climate Accord, while developing nations are worried about why Western nations have not put up the cash to help them adapt to a changing climate. From Paris, Elena Casas reports.
Developing countries say they need $100 billion a year by 2020 to adapt to the effects of climate change, but only two-thirds of that money has actually been pledged. The Paris summit aims to accelerate that and to encourage the private sector to contribute. The World Bank announced $4.5 billion in new funding to help cities adapt, while former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg unveiled an initiative by more than 150 international financial firms to move away from investments in fossil fuels. But there have been few new commitments from nation states, with NGOs pointing to the lack of action on plans for a Europe-wide financial transaction tax to finance climate adaptation, an election promise of French President Emmanuel Macron's. Elena Casas, Paris.
At least one person is dead and 18 injured after a major European natural gas pipeline exploded in Austria. This is FSN.
Thank you very much, Priscilla Huff. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. It is the 12th of December, 2017. It's been a very cold, bitterly cold day here in the great city. Not the snow that we've seen elsewhere, which is a blessing, I think. Thanks for joining me. Twitter, I'm observing you. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. If there's something you'd like to say it to me now.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show. Brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Welcome to the show. Right, Christine Celeste joins me this hour. I'm looking forward to speaking with Christine. Christine is a male-to-female cross-dresser. Got in touch with the programme 10 or so days ago. She writes a blog which is insightful and very interesting. It's called exploringmyfeminineside.com. And there was a critique on the blog recently of my approach to gender identity and gender fluidity, written in a very thoughtful way. So I've chatted with Christine. She's agreed to come on the programme to talk about these issues, so she joins me this hour. And in the second hour, Dr. Mark Circus joins me live from Brazil. Now, he's an old friend, is Mark, from way back, and he hasn't been on this incarnation of the Richie Allen Show. That's quite strange. Mark will talk about medicinal marijuana, bicarbonate of soda, and he's also going to talk about why hydrogen treatment is going to change, he believes, medicine forever. He's a really good guy. Dr. Mark Serkis joins us live from the Brazilian rainforest, and that's coming up in the second hour. Yes, live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and of course, TuneIn Radio. Hope you're wrapped up well wherever you are in the UK, particularly in, obviously, on higher ground, where it is very, very cold. The good news is, particularly, again, keeping in mind those less fortunate than ourselves, the good news is the cold snap is going to break somewhat overnight. It's going to become a little bit more mild, not as freezing as it's been here in the country. In some parts of the UK, allegedly, it was colder than in some parts of Russia over the last couple of days. Anyway, I'm not a meteorologist, so I'll leave the weather alone for now, and we'll crack straight into something that was sent to me by Penny Sharp. Penny is a listener to the programme. How you doing, Penny? I wouldn't have seen this today, but there are two stories. There's one on davidicke.com about Richard Branson suing the NHS over a contract that Virgin Care didn't win, which is extraordinary, really. We covered that story initially a couple of weeks ago. But here's a story from the Lancashire Post today, and this has implications for everybody in the world. It isn't just an issue that's local to the northwest of England. For everybody. The headline on the Lancashire Post: Lancashire County Council awards 104 million NHS contract to Virgin Care. The paper reports there is fury as Virgin is given charge of NHS Child Health Services. The Labour Party are disgusted about this. Branson's Virgin Care will take over the Healthy Child programme for the next 5 years. It's worth £104 million to Virgin. Now, Richard Branson's Virgin Care company has beaten Lancashire Care NHS Foundation Trust in the tendering process to run Lancashire's 0 to 19 Healthy Child programme for the next 5 years. That means newborn babies up until you turn 19. Today, the furious Labour leader on the County Council branded the decision privatisation by the back door. He's Councillor Azhar Ali, who was in London apparently this afternoon complaining to MPs about this. He said this is a massive contract and it has major ramifications for healthcare in Lancashire. It's a terrible blow and could have an impact on the viability of the Lancashire Care Trust. The programme, which covers services such as school nurses and health visitors for children and young people, is worth up to £21 million a year. The service is currently carried out by the Lancashire Care Trust, but their contract runs out at the end of next March. The Lancashire Post understands that Virgin pipped the Lancashire Care Trust by the narrowest of margins in the procurement process at County Hall. This has implications for everybody. For everybody. Okay? The deal is now in a legal standstill period to allow the unsuccessful bidders to lodge a formal appeal. So presumably, Lancashire Care Trust, even though they lost the bid, can now appeal against the decision. They're considering challenging it, according to the Lancashire Post newspaper. The government said today, well, I should say Conservative councillors on Lancashire County Council, they said the process was open and transparent. But Unite Trade Union, which has hundreds of members employed by the trust, condemned it and condemned the council's decision to overlook the National Health Service in favour of Virgin Care. Steve Turner, who's a Unite official, said, "I'm appalled," he said. "This just shows the contempt that the Tories on the County Council hold public sector workers in. It's exactly what we've been warning about. These contracts are now being given to the private sector, and that is obviously the government's agenda." West Lancashire MP Rosie Cooper described it as a slap in the face for NHS providers around the country, and other MPs, again, Labour MPs and Liberal Democrat councillors and so on, said that it isn't privatisation by the back door, it's privatisation by the front door. So what is this Healthy Child programme? Well, according to the Lancashire Post, The service is aimed at improving and promoting health for all children and young people and to prevent health inequalities. It is a universal programme led by Health Visiting and School Nursing Services, which aims to ensure that every child gets the good start they need to lay the foundations of a healthy life. They describe this as high quality, cost effective, integrated and targeted, and it's intended to break the cycle of reliance on high cost reactive services and to reduce poor health outcomes and inequalities across Lancashire. The programme aims to help parents develop and sustain a strong bond with children. There's the alarm bell right there. The programme aims to promote and develop and sustain a strong bond between parents and children. Encourage care that keeps children healthy and safe. There's another red line right there. So now you have Virgin Care, owned by Richard Branson, one of the close friends of Jeffrey Epstein. Of course, the billionaire paedophile, old Dickie Branson. He's in charge of it now in Lancashire, and they're going to be encouraging parents to develop strong bonds with their children, encouraging parents to keep their children healthy. How are they going to do that, by the way? It's like The Firm, isn't it? John Grisham. The Firm encourages marriage. Well, how does it do that exactly? The Firm will encourage good relationships between parents and children. How will it do that exactly? This is tyranny. This is proper 1984 stuff. So you have a massive corporation, Virgin, whose only interest is its bottom line, to make money, being given the rule over the relationships between families, between parents and children, and what parenting is qualified as good parenting and what parenting is qualified as bad. Tis mad, huh? Oh, after that, David Icke and all those other guests that come on this programme to talk about this stuff, sure, they're all mad. Conspiracy theorists. Right there. And Branson, of course, has won this contract, but he's currently suing the NHS because he lost another contract. Go to davidicke.com to see that. This is tyranny. 11 and a half minutes past the hour. Here's more madness. Sexual harassment of girls is widespread in mixed schools. That's according to new research from the National Education Union. Right? Sexual harassment in co-ed schools. I went to a co-ed primary school and I went to a co-ed secondary school. It's why I'm such a devil with the ladies. I'm not. But I did. And I think where this is going is they're going to try and eventually eliminate co-ed schools, back to all boys together schools and all girls together schools. Apparently, sexist language and gender stereotypes are part of a classroom culture which has led to more than a third, that's 37% of girls, experiencing sexual harassment while at school. One third of girls responding to this survey said they've experienced sexual harassment. It's an anonymous survey and it was completed by more than 1,500 secondary school students in England and Wales. 66% of female students and 37% of male students in mixed sex sixth forms say they have experienced or witnessed the use of sexist language in schools. These would be 15 to 16 year olds, 16 to 17 year olds maybe. It was a trend also noted by teachers. 64% of teachers said they hear sexist language in schools on at least a weekly basis. Campaigners want the government to issue new national guidelines on how to prevent and respond to the growing problem. They are also calling for teachers to receive the necessary training, resources and support to develop a strategy for tackling sexism from primary to secondary school. And Kevin Courtney, the Joint General Secretary at the National Education Union, said, Kevin said, sexism is an issue affecting every school and college. It's everywhere. Our study reveals that we must address the gender stereotypes and the ideas about men and women that lead to such prevalent levels of sexual harassment. Ah, the gender stereotypes. Here we go again. Now, to me, sexual harassment means unwanted sexual advances, unsolicited comments from a member of the opposite sex or the same sex, advances and comments that continue after you've said no. My definition should be taken up by Oxford and Cambridge. Do you want to hear my definition again? Genuine sexual harassment, unwanted advances, unsolicited comments from a member of, well, it doesn't matter, same sex, opposite sex, after you have advised that those advances and comments are not welcome. But no, the people pushing this interference in the natural relationships between children, they want to broaden the definition of sexual harassment to include gender stereotyping. Stereotyping someone is harassment, they're saying now. Now, Kerry Smith works for Plan International UK. She was on Sky News today, was Kerry. She's delighted with this news. Delighted that all of these girls are coming forward to say that they're being sexually harassed. Kerry Smith.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting situation. So I think we all say, are really telling girls that they're not allowed to play football or don't be such a girl if they do something badly. Seems to be at the soft end of what people are talking about here. But actually that really builds up into this idea that girls aren't very much valued, that they should be sexualised. So what the NUT and UK Feminista and also in our own research from Plan are seeing is that girls are being groped, that their skirts are being lifted up. And actually these are having really big impacts and are going and is going unrecognised. And so this survey today is great. A third of girls in our schools are saying they have been sexually harassed in schools. And that is something that we actually have to stop and really focus on preventing.
So when you define, how are you defining sexual harassment in school? This is physical touching and inappropriate physical touching.
And also a language that is used that is of a sexual nature. So calling someone a slut, a slag, a whore, but also, yes, inappropriate sexual touching or sexual innuendos.
But who is telling girls they can't play football? I've done a bit of research. More girls than ever are playing football in this country. The Football Association, along with the major sports broadcasters, are behind all sorts of initiatives and have been for years. The women's national team is doing well in the UK, as are some of the clubs. Chelsea ladies, Arsenal ladies, Liverpool ladies, all doing very well in Europe. The games are on television, which I believe is right and proper, and I've been a football fan for years. I'm not virtue signalling. Damn right, we should have the women's games on TV. So it's going well. But touching and groping girls and calling them sluts and whores, well, that's never been accepted. That's already legislated for in law and in schools. Just report it. If some boy or girl calls you a slut or a whore, report them. What is this woman talking about? It does get worse, you know.
I think we can see the damage in the long-term effects. I mean, you know, the scandals that went across Westminster or across the film industry don't come out of anything, say, or nothing. You know, in schools, what girls are telling us is that, you know, they feel afraid to put up their hands because they don't want attention on them, because, you know, getting attention on you means that you're subject to harassment. They're saying we don't actually want to choose subjects like physics or chemistry or maths because they'll be in classrooms with a lot of boys and we're really worried about what that looks like. So I think, you know, the impacts are actually very immediate. So it makes girls feel, you know, threatened, feel like they can't be themselves, and also feel under attack.
Where are these schools? I mean, where are these schools? Will somebody point me in the direction of one of these schools where girls won't put their hands up to answer a question because they'll be harassed or won't choose physics? I mean, I smell bull spit, dear listener. Girls won't put their hands up because if they put their hands up to answer a question, they'll eventually be harassed. I mean, it's madness. What do they want us to believe, you know? A teacher is asking a few questions. What year was the Battle of Hastings, children? Anyone? Yes, Jasmine. Slut! Now, James, at least let Cedar's Jasmine know the answer first before condemning her. 1066, sir. Well done, Jasmine. Is that what they're saying is going on? Are we supposed to believe it? I mean, I want to see it in action before I'll accept it. Am I saying that in some schools that boys behave stupidly and in some classrooms? No, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. But we've dealt with this forever. You know, he's warned about his conduct. He's warned again. He's suspended. And eventually, if he keeps calling somebody names and groping them, he'll be excluded. That's the way it works, right? What does Kerry Smith think needs to be done? What do we need to do, Kerry?
I think we really need to have a real focus. This survey today is, I think, a very big clarion call for the country to say we need to act now and we need to start preventing it. And how you do that is you resource schools, you resource teachers, you give them the space in the new relationship and sex education guidelines to really examine what gender inequality is, to really look at what healthy relationships, consensual relationships are, to look at the new environment that our girls and boys are growing up in, so the digital environment. What does pornography mean to for these girls and boys? And to really take them on that journey. But we also can't just stop at schools. You know, we as parents, as individuals in society, whenever we go, oh, isn't she a pretty little princess, or isn't he a wonderful soldier, we also need to think about the language we use with girls and boys, the language we talk to our daughters and sons with. And also, I think that, you know, the government could also help parents access information more about how they can help their girls and boys in these environments, you know, resist and you know, push back against some of the stereotyping that's happening, that then also becomes harassment and can become violence in very serious cases.
It's madness, this, isn't it? There's no other way to describe it. It isn't me being, you know, loutish or laddish or overbearing or domineering. This is just madness. You heard her say the new progressivism, didn't you? Did you hear her say the new progressivism, what we need to do to get people to think the way we want them to think?
And to really take them on that journey.
Get them on a journey, like Owen Jones says, get them on a journey, off to Margate, on a bus. And when we come back, we'll all be re-educated into thinking and speaking the way they want us to think and to speak. It's very, very spooky, this, of course. It's about deliberately confusing younger folks about their gender. It's deliberate. And I think ultimately it's going to affect the natural dynamic between the sexes. It'll interfere in the natural relationships between young men and women, how those relationships develop. You know, I was thinking back to when I was in primary school, and even when I was in secondary school, which I began secondary school in 1987. And there would have been a lot of slurs used to describe gay men and women then. You know, slurs, bad language, you know, demeaning language, which I suppose if you were a gay, you know, a young gay man or woman, it would have been pretty scary to hear that sort of stuff. Very disconcerting anyway. But without the interference of the state, without the interference of education departments, we evolved and students evolved to the point where we realised that it doesn't really matter what sexuality somebody is or what sexuality they're not. You just get on with them or you don't get on with them based on what they say and what they do. There was no need for this sort of interference, you see. So they're going to interfere between the sexes, and eventually people will be terrified to even affectionately touch one another on the shoulder, hug one another. And mark my words, dear listener, at some time in the very near future, somebody's going to suggest that we go in education to, in order to bring about respect for one another, it might be the best thing to do away with co-ed schools altogether. Somebody will suggest it. I'm not saying it will happen, but it'll be suggested. It's 22 and a half minutes past the hour. This is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. It is the 12th of December, 2017. Here's a quick break.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial. It's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Clear mind, ability to handle stressful situations, and make better and wiser decisions. The specialist you need is Dr. Laura, the chiropractor. Yes, chiropractor. Gentle chiropractic techniques like the Webster technique has been proven to help you achieve all of those. When your spine is properly aligned, you have a clear brain-body connection, which in turn helps with your basic bodily functions on both physical and mental level. This gentle technique is wonderful for pregnant women and children, including infants, and addresses a vast array of issues. Visit www.soulshinechiropractic.com to book your free consultation with Dr. Laura at her Brooklyn clinic. Initial consultation is free, and potential benefits of treatment can stretch much further than you think. That's www.soulshinechiropractic.com.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And you're welcome back to it. 26 minutes past the hour for Tuesday's program. Thanks for joining me. A lot of tweets already about several different subjects. Bit of a conversation going on there about Edward Heath and stuff like that, which we're not talking about tonight. But I'm looking forward to speaking with our first guest, this evening. We've had a couple of conversations, and I'm glad that she's agreed to come on. I mentioned at the top of the programme, a week or so ago, about 10 days ago, she shared her blog with me, which is well worth a look, I think. It's called exploringmyfeminineside.com. And in one particular blog, she talked about gender identity and her own experiences as a male-to-female cross-dresser, and was critical of my approach to it and the way it's dealt with on this programme, particularly in some of the monologues, which I completely accept. I accept the rights of anybody to criticise it. But it's very, very interesting that we're talking about this subject so much. Because it seems, and we spoke about this today, my guest and I, it seems that every other day, not just in the Daily Mail, but tragically, many of these stories appear in the Daily Mail. It appears that on a daily basis, we have these stories about gender identity, gender fluidity, and gender confusion. My first guest, as I said, is a male-to-female cross-dresser. I recommend exploringmyfeminineside.com. Do check it out. There's also some other interesting articles on there about other subjects we cover. Let's welcome to the programme Christine Celeste. Hey, Christine, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks, Chris. Richie. Yeah, I'm fine.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for writing the blog, by the way, and thanks for giving us an honorary mention in it. I really appreciate that. Listen, tell us then, give her, because I'm always reticent and reluctant to be describing people that I don't know that well. I liked the blog and we had a conversation today. How would you describe yourself then, now that we're talking about identity, Christine? What would you say about yourself if you were describing yourself?
So I would say that I am basically a man. I know I'm a man, but from a very early age, I've had a strong feminine side, shall we say. So as with most cross-dressers like me, I think you'd find that they started cross-dressing when they were pretty much as young as they can remember. So around the age of, I don't know, four, maybe three, five, something like that, I would go into my mum's bedroom and put her clothes on and feel a great sense of, I suppose, comfort, satisfaction, being in that state. And that's continued all the way through my life. And again, along with a lot of cross-dressers, I think like me, they would say that they've had purges throughout their life where they've been overcome by guilt or shame or disgust or whatever and tried to stop it. But it's continued as a persistent theme and something that needs to be expressed. So coming back to your question, I say I'm a man, but I have that feminine side that I need to express from time to time. And that means dressing up as a woman and feeling like a woman in that time, but, you know, knowing I'm a man. So, you can look at it in all sorts of different ways. You know, as a counsellor myself, I've spent a long time trying to understand it for myself through reading psychodynamic literature, through my own explorations, through talking to my own counsellor about it and talking to others. And I suppose I've come to the conclusion that it is a very important part of me. It's like a different persona, but it's still me that's presenting through a feminine aspect.
Christine, we're just getting a bit of interference there, a bit of crackly noise. I don't know if you're typing or if you're writing while we're chatting. We're just getting a bit of background noise there.
Maybe it's my microphone. I'm waving my arms around as I'm talking. I try not to do that.
Well, yeah. Which I do as well. But I don't have a mic strapped to my body. All right, that's all it was. I was wondering about that. It wasn't easy for you because you say in the piece that you wrote that you come from a conservative, a very conservative family. So that couldn't have been easy. Were there problems? You know, do you remember being asked about it or being scolded about it or being criticised for it when you were younger?
Well, the only time that I actually let my parents know about it was when, I don't know, I must have been something like 7 or 8 and my younger sister was about 3 years younger than me and she dressed up in some boy clothes, I dressed up in some girl clothes, went down to the living room where my parents and my elder brother were, and I just remember feeling quite ashamed. You know, I was kind of quite proud that this is something that I was doing, and there was a very much a sense of, oh, don't quite understand this, don't feel very comfortable with this. And I think my brother gave me some chip and I kind of went back with my tail between my legs, and that was the last they ever saw of my feminine side. So from that time onwards, it was kept very secret. So I used to go into the bathroom and maybe spend an hour or so in the bathroom and put makeup on, or, you know, things like that. You know, just it was all very secret, and it's, you know, it's remained secret through most of my life, to be honest. And that's part of the problem with it, really. I'm now, over the last few years, becoming a lot more open with it. So I've spoken to various people on my counselling course and other friends, so I've come out to, and they've generally been very accepting, although obviously it's still very much a subject that's very difficult for people to understand, as it is for me and most cross-dressers.
Fair enough, and tell me to mind my own business if you want, Christine, but you know, you said that, you know, you're obviously physically a man. Do you pursue relationships with women or men or both? Again, tell me to mind my own business. Just curiosity, really.
No, that's fair enough. I'm as you might call, male heterosexually oriented, so I'm attracted to women. And I've looked for a homosexual side, if you like, that's attracted to men, but I've not found one. I don't find men sexually attractive. So it's, and again, I think that would be common with most people in my little bracket in the transgender spectrum. Sorry, I'm waving my arms around again.
I can hear it. Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll soldier on through. I mean, I'm really interested in the part that, you know, I'm really interested in you talking about having a psychological, you know, a sense of well-being and comfort. I don't have any special insight at all into any of these issues, just opinions based on what I've read. I'm very interested in that. It's something I'd like to explore more with on the programme. So it was difficult for you, of course, then, obviously through your teens and late teens, because I suppose everybody wants to be who they are, Christine, and you don't want to be concealing aspects of who you are and your personality, and you'd prefer to be able to say to people, you know, if they want to know, because of course it could be your business as well, but you'd prefer to be able to chat with people and say, well, yeah, I dress up in women's clothes from time to time, this is who I am, and let that be the end of it. we've always had, I think, haven't we? I mean, you've obviously done more research than I have. But throughout, at least as far back as I can remember, we've always had people who like dressing in the clothes of the sex, you know, the opposite sex. We've always had trans men and women. I know it's not always been easy. You know, and people who come on this programme, who've talked about these issues over the years, I know that, Jesus, particularly in the 70s and 80s, it must have been very, very difficult for anybody who was living a lifestyle that was considered to be alternative. It wasn't easy for them. I mean, violence and abuse, we know that. But was I right? I don't know if you heard the monologue, and if you didn't, you're, it's just as well you didn't. But am I was hinting at we kind of, without the interference of the state or the law, Christine, we naturally kind of policed ourselves over the last 25, 30 years. I know Andrew Pearce, the writer and Sky News broadcaster, he's a gay man, he kind of agrees with this. We kind of came to understand that we really should let people be whoever they want to be and leave them alone and not, you know, not discriminate against them and not make them feel bad for that. Now, I'm not saying it still didn't go on, but I think, you know, as a society, we certainly became more, you know, comfortable with people living lifestyles that we would have previously maybe frowned upon. And what we're seeing now is maybe, you know, a bit of state interference in this issue. And that's where where my eyebrows are raised and I get interested in it. Do you want to speak to the first point? Do you think that we did become, over the years, you know, self-policing, become more tolerant and more accepting of people's lifestyles?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Yeah. And I mean, jumping straight into that whole point, I know you don't like people to agree with you too much on your show, but I do agree with you in terms of the agenda and the state interfering, and particularly the vilification of people who may have reservations, may make mistakes, you know, all this business of labelling and stuff. I think it's counterproductive. I really do. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, it sort of creates that sense of a backlash against it because people are being forced into accepting something which they may well be quite uncomfortable with. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'll meet someone and, you know, not everyone is accepting. So one of the people on my counselling course, for example, she was, you know, quite, you know, she found it very, very difficult. You know, and I understand that, and that's fine. We can have a discussion about it.
But how did she find it difficult, Christine? Sorry to interrupt because I'm intrigued by this. How did she find it difficult? How did that manifest?
So we went away on a weekend for my counselling course, and I got dressed up for one day and spent the day as Christine. And most of them were quite accepting. They really didn't bat an eyelid. It was fine by them. But one of them really sort of closed down in the sessions and really could hardly look at me. And then she told me afterwards that she felt very uncomfortable about it, and actually she'd contemplated going home. And of course, I felt very bad about that. And then there was the question of, well, is that her problem? Is that my problem? Should I not have dressed up because it disturbed her? That's a valid debate. You know, it may have been better for me not to have dressed and take her views into consideration. But the other side, you know, maybe I should be able to express myself, and maybe she, you know, has to be uncomfortable with it.
Yes,
for a bit.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah. And again, I'm not virtue signalling. 100% right. If you want to dress as a lady that particular day, I would say, yes, you should do that if you want to. I would also say, and you probably won't be surprised by this, that I understand her right to think there's something wrong with it. And of course, this is a massive issue here. I don't think there's something wrong with it. I could swear on a stack of Bibles to that. We're back to the Bible again, even though I don't believe in the Bible. But I could swear on all that's sacred to me that, you know, absolutely, do whatever you want. And I won't shun you or anybody else. I'll have a beer with you. We'll have a chat. But it's the rights of people to be uncomfortable with something. Where does that right begin, and where does it possibly end with discrimination and intolerance that could be harmful? And this is so grey, this, Christine, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very important. I mean, for me, I suppose I could empathise with her precisely because the way she was reacting was actually, there's a big part of me for my Methodist upbringing. I know, you know, was brought up in a Methodist, quite a strict Methodist church. My dad and parents were, you know, generally quite open, but there was definitely a hint of, I suppose, homophobia in there, linked with the sort of Christian beliefs. And I think the cross-dressing side of it would certainly have been condemned, if you like. And I think that, so I can perfectly understand that and empathise with it totally, because it's, you know, that I've got an inner judge that judges me just as harshly. And sometimes when I look at other cross-dressers, you know, there's that same thing comes out of me. So there's that part within me as well. And I think it's wrong that society should be condemning someone like her. I totally agree. And even, you know, going beyond that and firing people or suspending people from their jobs or vilifying people for saying anything that isn't 100% supportive of any transgender person who might think they're this, that, and the other. You know what I mean? I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think it's self-defeating. And I think it is all part of this agenda for controlling people, creating barriers and conflict between people where it shouldn't exist. So, I mean, just to continue the story with the woman I'm talking about, she was uncomfortable with it. She told me she was uncomfortable. I accepted it and I apologised for any concern I'd caused her. We left it at that. And then a few weeks later, she came to me and said, look, I'd like to sit down and have a conversation with you because I'd like to understand it a little bit more. So we worked it out in our own way. We didn't need any state intervention. We didn't need any particular labelling or, you know, there was no major offence. It was dealt with between two mature people.
Grown up. I like that, Christine. A grown up way of sorting things out. Yeah.
I think coming back to your point about society, I think society is generally a lot more accepting and able to have those sort of conversations without this heavy-handed state intervention.
First time I met a trans woman, what I found was totally bizarre, more than anything, I'm not saying this for a laugh, it's absolutely true, was the normality of the conversation we were having. I found that completely bizarre. I was speaking to a trans woman who looked very much like a woman but was a man with male genitalia and was chatting away to me about stuff so normal and so casually. And this is some years ago now, and I was sitting there thinking, this is just totally fucked up. I'm sorry, Christine. That's what I thought at the time, right? I thought this is mad,
I
right?
I understand it, yeah.
But after a while, of course, I'm like, well, it isn't really, you know, whose round is it kind of a thing. Now this is really important. One of the things I wanted to chat to you about, Christine's blog is exploringmyfeminineside.com. You're not thrilled about introducing the idea of gender identity to 5 or 6 year old, and you talked about that. Tell me why you're not thrilled about that idea, number one. And number two, let's try and broach the subject of gender fluidity, because I don't get that. And I do get a bit of stick for it, and I'll take it. You know, I'm not the bully boy, you know, laddish type that I get portrayed as sometimes. I'm not. I am a decent, fairly sensitive bloke, and I don't want to hurt anybody. But this idea of jumping in and out of genders, I just don't get it. But let's talk about, maybe it's none of my business whether I get it or not. What about teaching children about this sort of stuff? I don't like it, Christine, you know this. What do you think about it?
Well, I think that at an early impressionable age like that, you know, up to the age of 6 or 7, there's a lot of potential confusion in a child's mind. They're trying to establish what their identity is. And I think it's not necessarily helpful to have that sort of thing happening quite so overtly in that way. I mean, for example, if there was a transgender teacher who was naturally there, then that would be okay. But to force the issue, I think, particularly by putting drag queens in there with, I think, as you pointed out the other day, the sort of sexual connotations of that sort of stuff, I don't think that's helpful. I think there's enough confusion for kids growing up anyway without having to deal with that. I think a far more sensible way of doing it is just to inculcate in those kids a sense of tolerance for people. It's labelled as diversity and inclusion, and you know, it's one of those buzzwords. But actually, practically speaking, it means taking people as you see them. If they're different to you, then, you know, maybe you don't like them, maybe you do like it, but have a conversation with them, agree to dislike it, agree to disagree if you like. But that sort of open acceptance of people and how they are and allowing people to express themselves freely, I think, is the sort of values that you should be encouraging in children, but to go into that gender space, I think, is potentially causing more harm than good. I think you could be creating gender confusion where it didn't exist before in the child, and it's not the easiest thing to deal with, frankly. And it may be coming easy, I don't know, but it's not the easiest thing to deal with.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Christine is live. One or two people asked me, why am I referring to you as Christine? Well, the blog is Christine Celeste, and that's why I'm referring to Christine as Christine. ExploringMyFeminineSide.com. Check it out there. You know, we think that it's a bit more sinister. And you know that we, when I say we, it's the royal we. I say David and myself, not because I'm, you know, David's, you know, nodding dog who agrees with everything he ever said. I certainly don't. But on this, we're in agreement that it's a bit more sinister, and that there might be some agenda to deliberately confuse people with gender, working towards maybe, you know, some sort of genderless future. Of course, this has got nothing to do with cross-dressing men or women, with trans men or women, or gay men and women. And we can't emphasise this enough. And again, it's not because we're, you know, it's not, you know, it's I'm not a racist, I have a black friend. It's not that. It's genuine. There's no way this is coming from trans men and women. It's coming from somewhere else. What do you think of that, Christine?
I agree with you. And in fact, a couple of points I wanted to touch on. One is, I think, the occult significance of it and the mind control programming. I suspect, I haven't heard any direct evidence of this, that some of the latest mind control program is programming kids as transgender sex toys. So I think there's a sinister element linked in with the satanic side of it. I think anything that confuses people and confuses their identity, I think, is probably part of it as well. As you say, it seems to have suddenly come upon us in a wave, and I feel as uncomfortable, well, probably I don't feel quite as uncomfortable about it as you do, but I certainly do feel uncomfortable about it, and I'm suspicious of it, and I don't like it, and that goes along with all the other political correctness agenda that's going on. It's policing people to the level of, you know, they can't say this, they can't say that. They're imprisoned in their own minds. I don't think it necessarily changes people's opinions, but they just don't say it now. So I agree it's a very sinister thing. And as I say, I think there may be some linkage back into that whole satanic network, you know, taking away that gender identity thing.
That's incredible, that. And you're, and I must mention that Christine's day job is as a counsellor. You know, a psychotherapist, obviously a very, you know, a very interesting job and profession by itself. As somebody who's been through the therapy process myself, I can testify to the importance of it. And, you know, and for somebody like you to say that there might be some satanic agenda to it, and you see, you accept that there might be at least this plan to, you know, eliminate the male, female, and, get, you know, bring about this genderless society. How you know, as somebody who was trained to, of course you were trained, Christine, to rationally and, you know, using peer-reviewed materials to help somebody come to an understanding of who they are, of, you know, of how they get through abuse or addiction or whatever. How does that sit with you, you know, coming across this information? It can't be easy, I wouldn't imagine.
Well, no, and I think I'd probably be very much the exception in the counselling community in terms of someone who sees the satanic element to all of this, and, you know, the whole Archon agenda behind it, and the, you know, the beings occupying a space outside of our time and space. So I buy into all that. I do believe it. I mean, like everyone else, when I first came across that, I thought, well, this is a load of bunkum, coming from an engineering background, actually. But the more I've looked into it, the more I see the truth in it. Yeah, absolutely. It's very much there. But it's almost something that you don't really talk about in polite counselling circles, to be honest.
But you know what? My next question was, obviously, you're not going to get into any cases, but we've had the lovely Sandra Fecht on this programme before. Sandra's a well-known therapist in Canada. Has anybody come to you, Christine, talking about child abuse, and have they mentioned any satanic elements to any of that? Has that ever come across, you know, any of your patients, have they ever talked about any of that stuff?
I haven't had direct experience of it, but I have been in supervision with other counsellors where I've noticed things that I might have picked up as ritual mind programming type elements. For example, a kid who reports standing in the middle of a circle of a group of men performing for them in one instance, and she was very seriously distressed, and I think, you know, a lot of sexual abuse history going on there. And the other one was someone who was spinning, who remembers a feeling of spinning, which if you've looked into some of the mind programming techniques, that's one of them, that they would perhaps sometimes even hang you upside down and spin you. And also she remembers seeing things like Disney characters on the walls, which is another one of the techniques that's used. So I've seen, not directly firsthand myself, but I've seen hints of it. And of course that's the sort of stuff that you try and bring that into the supervision group and talk about it, and generally speaking your supervisor's looking at you strangely, you know, so it's still not very well accepted. But I went along to Sandra's seminar in London a few weeks ago, which was quite fascinating, just before Ted Heath report came out.
Oh, before Mike Veal released
that
Operation
one, yeah.
Conifer. Right, how interesting, yeah. Christine. Yeah. Christine, let me just do a quick recap. Christine Celeste is live on the programme. Christine is a male-to-female cross-dresser and writes what I called, and I mean, is a very thoughtful and insightful blog, not only on her own experiences, but also about other issues like the BBC fake news, teaching to children and all. Very good blog on that as well. It is exploringmyfeminineside.com, and it's worth paying attention to. And she's on tonight talking about these issues around gender identity, gender fluidity. Gender fluidity, I just can't get my head around it. And it's not to say that people are not genuine. Of course people are genuine, if that's what they believe. But I just find it unusual, to say the least. And I do get a bit fed up when some of these people, who have as many, you know, have as much a right to their opinion as I do, but I do get annoyed when they start talking about changing language, you know, getting the government to change passport forms and all this sort of stuff. I get a bit pissed off, Christine, and I say, look, no, I'm not buying this, that you can jump from one gender into another, you know, whenever you feel like it. And you said in your blog, and I take it as a fair point, that I could cause hurt because sometimes a ranting tone develops. And I think that's a fair criticism, and I take it on board. I do get a bit ranty at times. I don't mean to, but on this particular one, it's gender fluidity. Not that people want to live like that, let them, but this whole, you have to accept it and let's start changing the language. Christine, no, I get a bit cheesed off with that. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's a great need to change the language. I think, well, just one other thing I wanted to mention was the, I don't know if you come across Jung's animus theories. So he said that all men have an inner feminine side and that women have an inner masculine side called the animus, or the anima and the animus respectively. So in some ways, and part of his individuation or process of like spiritual development is to contact and understand that side and almost bring it out. Now, that's not to say everyone should become cross-dressers, but it's a question of contacting and understanding that other side. And other people link that in with spirituality as well. They say that as you go up through the spiritual planes, you alternate in gender. So the physical plane, normal you, if you like, is whatever you are. And then on the plane above, it would be the alternate gender. And then the plane above that would be back to the original one. I mean, they're all kind of esoteric theories. But I think it's one thing recognizing and acknowledging that you are one gender with another element there, and playing with the other element, exploring that other element, which is kind of where I sit in the middle of this spectrum, and I've thought a lot about it and I'm quite comfortable with that. I think one of the things I don't like is the idea of having to change gender completely, or change sex if you like, and have an operation. I have a problem with too many people having operations. I mean, there is evidence to suggest that, okay, some people are very happy with their new body, if you like, but there's others who aren't happy with their new body and they want to change back again.
And that's difficult, of course.
Yeah, and I wonder whether there's too much encouragement of people to just immediately jump into the other gender, and have an expensive sex change operation. There may be a commercial drive
behind that. Well, Christine, it's interesting. Sorry to interrupt you there, because you're bringing up a good point, because Susan is listening to the programme. She's tweeting, Susan, and she's asking, you know, when should this kind of thing be discussed with youngsters? What age does Christine consider is appropriate for her kids to be given hormone treatment to change gender? And does Christine think that an operation won't change the discomfort somebody has with their body? But that's gender dysmorphia. That's I understand where Susan's coming from, different thing. Do you want to answer that quickly? Because then I've got one final question, which is, I think, a good question about when children start to, you know, experience what you experienced. I want to talk about how we should approach and deal with that. On the operations and Susan's point, what do you think? What age?
It's very difficult to say. To be honest, I think almost always associated with some kind of gender identity is some broader problem. I'm probably going to get hammered for saying this now, but to do with attachment, to do with the way the parents were brought up, maybe over-loving, absent fathers. There's all sorts of factors like that. So I think to deal with the gender thing without looking at those other things as well, I think is potentially harmful. And I think, to be honest, you're really not in a position to start talking about that until you're probably in your late teens, mid to late teens, you know, even into your 20s. But by then it's too late to arrest the progress of your normal gender, if you like, going through puberty. Yeah. So it's not a simple question. And in some respects, I might even be inclined to say, well, you know, let that run its course into your 20s and then start dealing with it. But stick with the body, but find a way of dealing with the feminine side.
Nobody's going to hammer you for that, Christine. I think most of our audience, if I can speak for our audience, maybe I shouldn't because it's diverse enough, but I think most people would think that's a very common sense approach. And I wanted to ask you finally, before we run out of time, if a young boy or a young girl expresses, and we had a lovely conversation on the programme some weeks ago with Glyn and Rebecca Hardy. I know Glyn listens regularly enough. You might be listening tonight, actually, Glyn. And their young boy, strongly identifies as a girl, and they're dealing with that. I'll get my, opinion out of the way very quickly. I would say that nobody should interfere. Nobody should make the child feel bad in any way about that, or make the child feel pressured about that. I would let the child, I suppose, explore whatever it is they want to explore. But if I was the school, I wouldn't be making too big a deal out of it. I would let the parents deal with it. And if it came into the playground or the classroom, as a teacher, I'd be inclined to tell the children the truth without telling them too much, if you understand. And that might sound like a contradiction in terms, but I'd be inclined to say, like, Alice or Kieran, they like to dress up sometimes, you know, as a boy or a girl, and that's what they want to do, and if that's what they want to do, they should be allowed. And I wouldn't get any further into that as a teacher. What do you think, Christine?
That sounds like a common sense approach. I mean, to be honest, I've not studied this particular with kids, when's the right age and things. So I'm really speaking a little bit out of my comfort zone or my knowledge zone, really. I mean, one thing that's true is that there is a spectrum. So there are kids who, by the end of their first year, boys, you know, physical boys, who are showing signs of strong femininity and feminine identity. And, you know, some of that may be genetic, but a lot of that is probably down to the way their mother and the parents interact with them in that first year, which again is a controversial thing. But so I think if they're pretty fixed in that, there's probably not much you're going to do to change that. So I think an acceptance of it without making too much of a big deal, I think, is probably the right approach for me, as pretty much as you've outlined there. So some way that they can follow their path, you know, if they strongly feel that they are a woman and that's their identity, which, you know, could well have been programmed into that early stage, then make their life as comfortable for them and allow them to follow that path. But they're going to, to be honest, they're going to have to learn to be tough to deal with that anyway.
This is a good point too. Yeah, this is a good point too. They're going to have to accept that they're going to live in a world where people won't understand them and won't accept them. And of course, we could spend the next hour talking about this. And you know, we will do this in the new year. We'll broach this subject again. We'll invite two or three different men and women on, and we'll have a good discussion about this. Because, you know, demanding acceptance and tolerance at the point of being punitive towards people who aren't accepting and tolerant, to me, is tyrannical. But it's a difficult one, because I stand by what I said. Nobody should be discriminated against or lose a job or to be made feel like an idiot or to be abused because of their lifestyle. They should not be. It should never happen. And it does happen, of course. But you know, I wouldn't accept it happening in my workspace, you know, any place I worked. It's really interesting, Christine. I'm glad that you came on. And I want to just give a shout out again to your blog before we run out of time. We should do this in the new year and get some other points of view on this and have a kind of a round table. It's exploringmyfeminineside.com, which is written by Christine Celeste. Christine, I enjoyed that. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for writing about our coverage of it. And thanks for putting your side to it. And please do come back again.
Love to. Yeah, thank you.
It was an honour. Thank you, Christine. Christine Celeste, live on the line to us there. ExploringMyFeminineSide.com is the blog. It's exactly the top of the hour. We'll take a very quick break when we come back. Try and get through some of your comments, but I do want to crack on because I'm a bit behind time. Dr. Mark Circus standing by in Brazil, waiting to talk to us shortly.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Clear mind, ability to handle stressful situations, and make better and wiser decisions. The specialist you need is Dr. Laura, the chiropractor. Yes, chiropractor. Gentle chiropractic techniques like the Webster technique has been proven to help you achieve all of those. When your spine is properly aligned, you have a clear brain-body connection, which in turn helps with your basic bodily functions on both physical and mental level. This gentle technique is wonderful for pregnant women and children, including infants, and addresses a vast array of issues. Visit www.soulshinechiropractic.com to book your free consultation with Dr. Lara at her Brooklyn clinic. Initial consultation is free, and potential benefits of treatment can stretch much further than you think. That's www.soulshinechiropractic.com.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper?
Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize,
yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings
may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece
with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and
valuable information to get published.
Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back. 3.5 minutes past the hour. Hi, Charlotte. Hi, Susan. Hi, Deborah. Thank you for the comments there on my conversation with Christine. I should have given you Christine's Twitter handle so you can follow her on Twitter there. Hi to Faisal as well. Susan Tonkin. How you doing, Susan? Natalie Stacey was listening as well. Lot of interesting comments on Twitter there. I'm so behind. Hi to Donna Devane. I'm so behind. Mother of Jesus, I'm so behind. So I better get some music on and get our next guest on. 4 minutes past the hour, Tuesday, December 12th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Dr. Mark Circus standing by in the rainforest in Brazil. One of the rainforests in Brazil, anyway. He's a top man. Can't wait for you to meet him. Back in three. Division, Love Will Tear Us Apart on the Richie Allen Show. 6.5 minutes past the hour. That's the time in the great city of everywhere. No, it isn't. In some countries, it's 36 minutes past the hour or to the hour. You know, I'm really excited about speaking with our next guest because it's been a long time since we chatted. He was a regular guest on my programmes in Spain many years ago, and he gave us loads of time. We spent hours speaking on my program about very important matters surrounding our health, our well-being, our consciousness. He's an amazing man. He's a pioneer in the field of natural allopathic medicine. He's written many books. I will provide links for those books about bicarbonate of soda, medical marijuana, and more besides. He's got a new book about hydrogen, which we'll talk about, which he believes is the big thing, the big coming thing in terms of healthcare and treatments. Acupuncture, oriental pastoral medicine. You can find him at drcircus.com. That's Dr. D-R-S-I-R-C-U-S, drcircus.com. Again, I will tweet out a link to that. I'm delighted, after such a long time, to welcome back to the programme my old friend, Dr. Mark Circus. Welcome, sir. How are you?
What an introduction. Wow.
Well, we should just stop now. That was the end of the programme. We'll see you again tomorrow at 7. I tell you what, it's great to have you back on. Honest to God, Mark, it's brilliant.
How's my volume? Is okay?
Your volume is great. You were telling me earlier on you've had 45 days of non-stop rain in the rainforest there, but you've not been washed away yet. Sounds mad.
Yeah, and tomorrow we have to travel and have to get across the river. Now, we just built a bridge, but the water goes through the bridge, but underneath and on top of it. So it's just borderline. It's been raining so much, it's covering the bridge. So we're trapped.
Good luck with that. It sounds very primitive, that, doesn't it? We've been building a bridge. I mean, most people won't even contemplate building, you know, a spice rack. And you're building a bridge. It's kind of extraordinary. Well, I'm chuffed. There's a great English word, chuffed. I'm chuffed that you're back on the programme. I was thinking of you last week and the week before, because there's a wonderful story about a lovely young girl in Cork City in Ireland, my home country. And she's had she has a very rare form of epilepsy, Mark, and it caused her to have terrible grand mal seizures umpteen times a day. But the family were taking her from Ireland to the Netherlands, to Holland, and they were taking cannabis oil there with a degree of THC content, and it basically eliminated the seizures. And the Irish government has given her a special license to get the medicine now in Ireland without having to go to Holland. And Mark, you know all about the healing effects of medicinal cannabis and cannabis oil. That's good news. That it seems that some governments are starting to open their minds to marijuana based treatments and cannabis oil. What do you think?
It's about time.
You're not surprised.
Marijuana is one of God's greatest gifts to us. It's probably, well, the top five medicines in the world. I mean, very few things can compete with marijuana in terms of the effects. And your friend or this patient who had epilepsy, it's just, whether it be cancer, using it as in a concentrated form for chemo, alternative form of chemo, instead of using highly toxic chemo, you use something that never killed anybody. So I just had a book, my marijuana book, published in New York, beginning of the year. And as we go into the future, it's a good time that governments are opening up, because people are freaking out. The stress levels are just going over the top. And alcohol is one of the main causes of cancer. So it's a much better option, even for recreation. Forget about medicine for a minute. Our emotions and our feelings and our spirits sometimes need anti-stress. And marijuana is one of the best substances for that.
Why is alcohol medicine, so toxic, Mark?
Just in terms of a medicine, it's just incredibly useful. And there are many ways of taking it, and you don't have to get high. You can eat it raw as a medicine, and it's not THC, it's THCA. So it's just a very versatile thing. In front of me, I have CBD, which doesn't have the THC in a salve. Use it to put on the skin, any kind of cuts, burns. It's wonderful.
Richie, go ahead.
I found something. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying.
I said I found something even better.
And this is the hydrogen, of course, that we were talking about today. Talk to us about this, Mark. This is groundbreaking stuff.
Well, hydrogen runs the universe. Be here without hydrogen. All the light and heat from the sun comes from hydrogen, from all the suns, so all the light and the galaxies and the universe itself all comes from hydrogen. We can run our cars and buses on hydrogen. You can run trains on hydrogen. And you can heal yourself with hydrogen. What I'm finding, and I started writing this book in the 1st of September. It's almost finished. And it's incredibly exciting. Not only am I introducing hydrogen medicine, and mine isn't the first book, but it'll be the first popular book, and you know, written by non-Japanese scientists.
Right, Mark is dropping in and out on us there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hang up, and we do have a phone number for him, so we'll phone him. And hopefully sort that out very quickly. In the meantime, we'll take some music very quickly. Back in a minute with Dr. Mark Circus. This was fine today when we did it today, but it's a bit sketchy now. So we'll try and sort that out. Back in a minute.
Out where the river broke.
Right, we're going to try Mark again. Apparently he's got an alternative system that he can switch to there in the jungle if it doesn't work this time around. Dr. Mark Circus. By the way, the website is Dr. Circus, and it's not spelled like the circus, as in clowns and trapeze high wire walkers. It's SIRCUS, Sierra Indigo Romeo Charlie Umbrella Sierra, right? How's that? Circus, drcircus.com. Check him out. Mark, I hope it's better this time around. Let's try it again.
I hope so too.
It's we know you're in a place where logistically things are not as easy as they are here, so we'll grin and bear it. But you're talking about a book that you've nearly completed, and it's about the healing effects of the naturally occurring gas hydrogen. Start again, because you were kind of dropping in and out on us there for a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. The subtitle of the book is Combining Oxygen with Hydrogen and Carbon Dioxide. Is focusing in on not only
This is not good at all, is it? This is not good. It's not happening. Right. And he's not able to get a good telephone reception there because of where he is. So, Mark, we're losing you quite a bit there. You're dropping out quite a bit on us. So we're just not getting you at all there. You're dropping in and out on us, I'm afraid, which is not good for us. And there he's gone again, look. But he did say he might be able to switch to another operating system there. So we'll give him a chance to do that. This is cheesing me off. I was so looking forward to this. Really, really interesting guy is Mark Circus. Spent many years speaking with Mark on late night radio in Spain. He was very good to us. He's in Brazil, which at the moment is about 2 hours behind us. So it's after, as we do this live, it's after 6 p.m. there in the rainforest in Brazil. We've done this before from the same location and it's worked, but at the moment it's problematic. And that is a kick in the arse, as we say in the old country. I'm really pissed off because I've been reading all day long about this, what he feels is a new groundbreaking way of treating various illnesses using hydrogen. And I wanted him to talk about that tonight as a way back into our program. Like I said, he's not been on this incarnation of the Richie Allen Show. For whatever reason, he's just not been. It's just one of those things. But he's here with us today. So I better take some more music, I suppose. We'll take some Snow Patrol and hopefully get him back. Let's hopefully get him back. If not, well, if not, what are you going to do? This is a song called Chocolate from Snow Patrol. And you're listening to The Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, December 12th, 2017 on davidicke.com and Fab Radio 2. And of course, we're on TuneIn Radio as well. We'll give Mark a couple of minutes to see can he get it together.
Strong fire.
Patrol and Chocolate on the Richie Allen Show. No sign of Dr. Mark Circus just yet. That's all right. A couple of things to talk about, though, which are of interest in the meantime. First of all, before we go back to the news, I want to say a big happy birthday to Gareth Ike. Happy birthday, Gareth Ike, the singer, songwriter, the musician, of course, who you will come across as David travels around the world speaking at these great speaking engagements. Often Gareth opens the event by singing some of his terrifically well-written music. He's a great musician, great singer-songwriter. It's Gareth. So happy birthday, mate. He's been in New York City with his wife, Gemma, celebrating his birthday and presumably doing a bit of pre-Christmas shopping in Manhattan. Happy birthday again. Here's an interesting story. You know, you talk about the mendacity of the mainstream media and the increasingly, I suppose, obvious to people who maybe never questioned the mainstream media before, the increasing lunacy and how mainstream media publications, particularly newspapers, are no longer trying to hide what they really are, which is not just apologists for the system, but, you know, actually working propagandists, actually working to push the system agenda. This was in the Times today. The London Times, Rupert Murdoch Times. A Kremlin-controlled TV station seized on the Grenfell Tower fire to try to foment a class war in Britain. Now, the Kremlin-controlled TV station they are referring to is obviously RT. The Times writes that RT misreported that £10 million had been spent cladding the building to improve its appearance to wealthy neighbours. Now, I don't know what that's about, because I understand that is true. The cladding was, you know, demanded by the more affluent people living in Kensington. But anyway, Afshin Ratansi, one of RT's presenters, writes the Times, asked if state-backed neglect, corruption and cuts to services had led to social cleansing at Grenfell. Well, it did, of course. But RT, well-meaning as it might be, it doesn't really understand the agenda behind gentrification. You know, what's really behind that? So the Times have said that basically RT, on the orders of the Kremlin, covered the Grenfell fire story in the way that it did. That's kind of mad, Ted, as it were. It's utterly bizarre that even the Times would stoop to that and try to convince their readership of that. George Galloway, of course, who used to be an MP and currently broadcasts for RT, he's one of their presenters these days, he, needless to say, was unimpressed by the Times article. Here's Galloway.
The very idea that a disaster in which 71, at least 71 poor people, men, women and children, were burned to death as a result of the failure of their landlord, which is the richest borough in England, the royal borough of Kensington and Chelsea, failing to make proper safety provision for them and cladding their building in arsenic. I'm not making that up. The cladding was made of arsenic, which poisoned those who were not actually burned to death. The idea that British anger at this is the responsibility of RT and of the Russians is beyond offensive. It is obscene. And I live, work in the area around Grenfell Tower. I have to look at it every day. I can still smell it every day. I'm a school governor in a school where there are children who have still not been rehoused 6 months after this inferno. The idea that we're all angry because the Russians told us to be angry is, as I say, beyond offensive. It is positively obscene.
Yes, it is obscene. And like I said, it's standards it's stooping to levels that you wouldn't expect UK news. Is that naive, that, to say that you'd never have expected him to stoop to levels as low as that? It's quite incredible that they think their readership would buy into that, that basically RT's coverage of what happened at Grenfell would be motivated by the Kremlin telling them how to cover it and what to say. It's kind of ludicrous, really. Now, Mark Serkis is, I believe, back online. We're going to try this one more time. Where Mark is situated, of course, geopolitically, doesn't make it easy. But it was okay earlier today when we had a good chat in advance of this. We hope we can get a steady line for a few minutes. So for all fingers and toes are crossed, Mark, that it'll work this time. Welcome back. And I don't think it will work. It's not going to plan this, is it? I wonder, can Mark hear us? We can hear something going on there in the background, but we can't hear Mark. Oh, well. Do you know what we'll do? We'll take a break. Back in a minute and we'll go another way. This is really a shame, this, because it's been so long since Mark was on. No. No. Oh, well. What can you do?
Clear mind, ability to handle stressful situations, and make better and wiser decisions. The specialist you need is Dr. Laura, the chiropractor. Yes, chiropractor. Gentle chiropractic techniques like the Webster technique has been proven to help you achieve all of those. When your spine is properly aligned, you have a clear brain-body connection, which in turn helps with your basic bodily functions on both physical and mental level. This gentle technique is wonderful for pregnant women and children, including infants, and addresses a vast array of issues. Visit www.soulshinechiropractic.com to book your free consultation with Dr. Laura at her Brooklyn clinic. Initial consultation is free and potential benefits of treatment can stretch much further than you think. That's www.soulshinechiropractic.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper?
Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize,
yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings
may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece
with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and
valuable information to get published.
Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now. So read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back. Yeah, just while the ad break was on there, we tried to work on one or two things to see if we get Mark on, but it's not happening. I don't know if this is an old-fashioned thing to say, because I don't know a lot about the technicalities of the internet, but possibly when we spoke a bit earlier on and we had a very clear line and there wasn't a problem with it. It might have been because it was in the AM in Brazil, which is a couple of hours where he is, and it was different time zones in Brazil, but where he is, they're 2 hours behind us in the UK. And earlier on, there might not have been as much traffic. I'm guessing that because it's approaching 6:30 p.m. there, there might be a lot of people online, and that might be the reason why it keeps dropping in and out. It could very well be the reason. And that being said, we will probably need to do a pre-record in the early AM where we can deal with it without any tech issues, which will be good because he's incredibly interesting and very engaging. But it'll mean that you won't be able to put questions to me, to put to him. Now, he's trying me again. I'm going to give this one more time. Of course, if I was on commercial radio now, we'd have moved on because it sounds very unprofessional to keep trying to do it. But because we're not on commercial radio, and because this is my own radio station, I can do whatever the bloody hell I want, and I can try one more time. One more time. Or was it one more night? It was one more night, wasn't it, Phil Collins? Yeah, it's not happening. It's just not happening. I've tried to connect to him there, and it just isn't happening. So a pre-record early next week is probably the order of the day. And again, the only drawback to that being you can't put questions to me to put to him. But I'll tell you what's very interesting about Mark. David introduced me when I was in London with David to Tullio Simoncini, the Italian former oncologist. And Mark Circus knows Tullio Simoncini very well, and he's from the same school of thought that Tullio is, and that is that bicarbonate of soda has had and can have very good success on shrinking tumours because of the, you know, the alkaline versus the acidic, and because these guys believe that tumours are fungal, and of course bicarbonate of soda is devastating to fungi. And I remember some years ago when I was working in Spain and I was introducing Mark to the programme, and I knew he was going to talk about bicarbonate of soda. The owner of Talk Radio Europe at the time, understandably, a guy called Martin Nathan, understandably, I have no problems with it at all, but he nearly shit the bed when he asked me what was he going to talk about. Now, he didn't have any editorial oversight over the programme. He wasn't the sort of owner who would say, what are you talking about? And, you know, you can't talk to him. There was none of that at all. Just out of curiosity, he said to me, what's this doctor? He said, you don't often have doctors on the programme. And I said, no, but this guy coming on from Brazil is going to talk about a number of things. One of the things he's going to talk about is the effects of bicarbonate of soda on tumours. And Martin said, baking soda. And I said, yeah, effectively baking soda. And he said, we're going to get into a lot of trouble. We're going to get into a lot of trouble, he said, if you don't challenge this. And I said, well, I am going to challenge it, obviously. I'm a journalist. You know, I'm going to ask him, where's the proof of it? And he said, well, look, we'll have a go, you know. Mark is asking me to try one more time, Dr. Circus. So let's give it one more try there and see can we get him on. Tragedy if we can't do this, but the pre-record, I think, you know, we'll do. I'm convinced this is because of the timing.
Unavailable. Please leave a message after the beep.
You see? Sorry about that, Mark. End of message. Yeah, it's just not happening. Oh, well. So, yeah, so he was adamant that, look, we could get into trouble because you can't have this. Now, the law in Spain regarding broadcasting is very different, very different. And there are a number of pirate stations in Spain owned by mostly English expats, and they do abide by, you know, basic broadcasting regulations around harm and stuff. You know, causing harm is very important. You don't cause harm. What you broadcast, what you say, can it cause harm? So that's a very subjective thing. In the United Kingdom, radio and television is governed by the Official Communications Act. It's known as Ofcom, Official Communications Ofcom. Now, I'm not bound by Ofcom regulations because I'm a... What am I? I'm a guy who out of a private radio studio, broadcast this programme, five live shows a week, but I'm not bound by the regulations of the regulatory authority in this country. However, you probably won't be surprised to hear that I agree with most of what the officials' communications, the Official Communications Act, expects of broadcasters. You know, incitement to hatred, incitement to violence. The causing harm is very subjective. Very subjective. You know, speaking with Christine Celeste about this earlier on, what is harmful? Is it harmful if I talk about gender fluidity and I speak about people who are gender fluid and if I'm very dismissive of gender fluidity as an idea, is that harmful to people with that philosophy? If I say condition, I'm a bigot. Now, there are those who would say it is harmful. I would say it isn't. It's just me expressing an opinion. But in Spain, it's not as officious. Yes, they expect standards of their broadcasters, but there isn't so much of an Ofcom there as there is a complaints commission. There's a complaints commission in Spain for people to complain to press and radio and television. But I remember he was absolutely terrified. And I interviewed Mark and I said, this baking soda thing. And he said, yeah, and he got into it. And of course, I interrupted him quite a bit. And I said, you can't be saying this because somebody, you might cause harm. Because somebody who has been diagnosed with stage 1, 2, 3 cancer or whatever, they might have been given a prognosis, they might have been given a pathway to treatment by their oncologist. You coming on here and saying, oh, well, if you take a load of baking soda, that's the end of it. You'll be okay. That could lead to problems for somebody who is maybe a bit sensitive to these matters and is maybe easily led. But he gave a brilliant answer to it, of course. And he said, well, look, this has been misreported. Guys like me are not saying that bicarbonate of soda is going to cure every tumour, every cancer in your body. We're saying that there is more than anecdotal evidence. In the case of Tullio Simoncini, he's operated on people and he has used it to shrink tumours and to prolong life, but not only to prolong life, but to significantly extend life. And Tullio believes, and he's been on this programme saying this before, he believes passionately that, you know, he's worked on people with stomach cancer, stomach tumours, and has used bicarbonate of soda. His story is amazing. It's on our YouTube channel. Look for Tullio Simoncini. He's been on 2 or 3 times. I'm fascinated by these guys. I'm really fascinated by these guys because when I started working on the People's Voice Television in London, that was about the time that the European Union, and of course the European Union meant pretty much every other government in Europe, well, the 27 anyway, had begun to outlaw various herbal packages, medicinal packages, in fact thousands of them at the time. And at the time I was speaking to Mark and others, and Tullio Simoncini, who David introduced me to, and he said, well, you see, this is coming down the line because a lot of these naturopathic, homeopathic remedies are having great success in people and they don't have side effects. You know, they don't cause any harm to the body. They help clear up various conditions. Because of that, you're going to see an increasing movement by Big Pharma lobbying the governments of the world and the European Union to outlaw all these medicines. And you might remember this, you might not remember it, but back in 2012, 2013, thousands and thousands of completely natural products that even if they only had a placebo effect or even if they had no effect whatsoever, couldn't do any physical harm to anybody whatsoever. But of course, the massive pharma companies of the world were behind that. And it's one of the reasons why Mark Cercas is working in Brazil, because of problems that he ran into with the FDA in America many years ago. And when we do get him on the programme, we'll talk to him about that as well. He's in Brazil because he can talk about what he talks about, and he can explore the areas he wants to explore without the, not just the oversight, but without being threatened with fines and ultimately imprisonment for saying what it is that that he says, you know. I have a question for you, really, that's very interesting. Mark talked there at the beginning. I mentioned the lovely story, of course, that we've been privileged to cover on the programme of young Ava in Cork and her lovely family with the very, 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 very serious and rare form of epilepsy, who was able to take the CBD oil. And by the way, I might have said THC earlier on. I don't think there was any THC content whatsoever in the oil that is working for Ava. It's just CBD oil. We had her mum on, Vera Toomey, of course. I think my question for you is, we've seen cannabis oil and cannabis for medicinal purposes. We've seen it being legalized in certain states in the United States. And we're thinking it's a positive thing, even though it's only a start. They still have to travel to Holland to pick up the oil and then come back to Ireland, but at least Ava can take it in Ireland. My question is, what's going on there? Surely the pharmaceutical conglomerates of the world are not happy and don't want the oil and cannabis itself, marijuana, to be used to alleviate conditions like the fits young Ava Toomey has had to put up with. So what's going on there? Where is Big Pharma on all of this? It might sound like a naive question. I don't think it is naive. Why is this being allowed is the question. Why is it being allowed? You know? Because there's obviously, you know, a very powerful lobby interest group that doesn't want marijuana, CBD oil, to be rolled out to people. So why is it happening? I'd love to know. I'd love to know if there's something else going on, something even more sinister. I know that we've talked on this programme before about, you know, the attempts to patent, ultimately, to patent marijuana, to patent cannabis and CBD. We've also talked about some months ago on the programme the attempts to genetically modify the cannabis plant, the marijuana plant, and to then patent various things, you know, various products out of that. But why some states in America have agreed with it, I don't know. And I'd like to know more. Maybe we should get Rick Simpson back on the programme again in the near future. 16 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. We should have been speaking with Dr. Mark Circus this hour, but sadly, the connection to Mark's home in the Brazilian rainforest isn't good. That might sound like, you know, well, that's obvious, Richie. You should have seen that coming. No, we spoke earlier on. It was absolutely fine. It could be the time there, but I am going to get him back on. Don't worry about it. In the meantime, his website is Dr. Circus, DRSIRCUS, drcircus.com. Check him out. There are videos on there as well, and there's a lot to read. There's also a free ebook that you can download on drcircus.com, man whom I spent many hours speaking with in my days in Spain. David Stanford tweets, they are getting ready to patent a synthetic version, so I've heard, Richie, he says. This is the thing. You've got to be very interested in why, you know, certain states have legalised it. Donna Devane, Donna is a broadcaster. Richie, I thought CBD was legal in the UK. I had a vendor to send me some a year ago. I use CBD daily. It works. No THC. I'll give her the URL. CBD oil in the UK. Yeah, it might be legal to buy it in the UK. I know there are websites selling it here. I think you might very well be right. It might be legal to buy it here. It is legal to buy here in the UK. It is. But it's still illegal to purchase the plant. To grow the plant. It's illegal to grow the plant. Although it's been said that police forces, if they come across somebody growing a plant, and it's growing a plant, just one for themselves, I've heard it said that they will turn a blind eye to it. It's not worth their time or worth their while. But CBD oil can be purchased here in the UK. But a friend of mine did say to me recently, it's difficult knowing what you're buying. Charlotte tells me that CBD oil is not only legal, but a very well-known health shop does sell it, but with a very low percentage. That makes sense to me. And people have said to me before, I've been thinking about buying it, Richie. Somebody said to me some months ago that they were thinking about buying it for an elderly relative who had problems with joint pain and other pains. And they were saying to me, but how do I know whether it's got a good concentration of what I need? Of what I need. Or what she needs. How do I know it's got a good enough concentration that it will be strong enough to do what it needs to do? And that's another thing. How do you know? There are any number of websites you can go on. People saying, I sell CBD oil, I sell CBD oil. But how do you know what you're getting has got the concentration of the active ingredient that will do the job, that will have the medicinal effect? You just don't know, do you? You don't know. I remember when Rick Simpson was on the programme a year and a half ago or so, I think Rick was on. And that was one of the questions people kept saying. Ask him, how do we know what we're buying in the UK is up to scratch? And he didn't have an answer for that. Helen Crosby tweets, "Me doing Helen, yes, it is legal here, Richie. I have a friend. I knew all along it was legal, Helen. I'm getting confused with THC contents and stuff like that. I did know that the well-known health store are selling it. But my mind is scrambled. CBD is legal here, writes Helen. I have a friend who sells it, but the people who do sell it encounter a lot of red tape. For example, PayPal won't allow CBD transactions. So PayPal won't allow people to use PayPal to exchange money if PayPal suspects it's for CBD. I suppose the best thing to do is not have your business name as part of your PayPal identity. And then, of course, PayPal won't know. And subsequently, PayPal can't decide to stop the transaction. Yeah. It's interesting. Jamie Icke did a show for us recently called Jamie Icke's Friday Night. And he had Alan Parker on the programme. Very, very interesting man, Alan. And Alan has been taking the oil for some years. And he had very aggressive cancer, which led to him being told at one stage by his oncologist that it was all over, game over. You know, he had months to live. And that was several years ago. But he's compounded his oncologist and the medical experts by recovering and, you know, his tumours shrinking. I'm not sure his tumours are entirely gone, but they shrunk and they've stopped growing. Which, again, has confounded the medical men and women and the doctors treating him. They found it quite staggering that he's not only not dead, that he's alive and well, but he's still doing stand-up comedy and he's still making radio programmes. That particular programme, by the way, is on our YouTube channel and it's on Podomatic. If you missed Jamie Icke's interview with Alan Parker, go to youtube.com and put Jamie Icke Friday Night Alan Parker. It's fascinating. It really is. Because this was Alan's first introduction to the independent media. He wasn't a conspiracy researcher, conspiracy theorist, none of that. He was a working comedian. He'd done a lot of mainstream television. And somebody recommended that he try the oil when he'd been told that his time is up. Can't imagine what that's like. Doctor says to you, get your affairs in order. It's game over. Heaven help anybody who has to hear that. But he started taking the oil and he's still around. And I've heard a lot of stories like that from credible people. So, yeah. So the oil is legal, But it sounds from what Helen Crosby told me that in the UK, it's got to have a very, very low concentration of the active ingredient. A very, very low concentration of the active ingredient, which might mean, right, which might mean, and I don't know because I'm not an expert, it might mean that buying the CBD oil from a health shop in the UK might be a waste of your time if it's got a very low concentration of the active ingredient. But again, how do you know this stuff? You know, when you buy anything online from anybody, it's not easy, you know. Bethany has tweeted me. She says, we, says Bethany, currently sell the oil, CBD oil. It's the highest form as it's 100% natural cannabidiol oil. It's a 10 milliliter bottle with approximately 240 drops and it's cold pressed hemp seeds. That's Bethany has tweeted that to me there on Twitter. Now, Bethany will understand why I could never endorse anybody or anything, but I've tweeted, in terms of medicine anyway, but I've retweeted Bethany. So if you want to look into that, you can look into that. I'm not impugning Bethany's character at all. I'm just saying Bethany is telling me this, but I don't know. But she's saying that it's got, the oil they sell has got the highest, it's the highest form of natural cannabidiol oil. Yeah. I mean, I've not been ill, thank God. You know, I get the occasional respiratory infection, which gets nasty. I avoid antibiotics like the plague. I just take the usual loads and loads of fluid, loads and loads of vitamin C. And I generally, after 2 or 3 days, I'm generally fine. I had pneumonia twice in my life. Actually, 3 times, believe it or not. Once when I was very young, and once in Manchester, once in Spain. Genuinely, not man flu. Not self-diagnosed either. Proper pneumonia. Lungs in a bad way. My lungs collapsed the first time I had it. But I avoid. That was a long time ago now. But since then, I've had nothing serious. But would I try something like that? You're damn right I would. Absolutely right. Why not? You know, I've seen enough evidence. I've heard from enough people on this programme. I've read enough from people whom I deem to be credible that the oil is, you know, to say miracle cure is over the top, but it has very, very significant, I believe, success on a wide variety of ailments. And when you listen to a lady like Vera Toomey from Cork City, who again, you know, and she explained the first time she came on our programme who she is, you know, not interested really in conspiracy research, not interested in our programme, never heard of it, let alone heard of you know, the great David Icke or anybody else. But due to no, there seemingly not being anything to help young Ava and those devastating seizures, they gave the oil a chance and it worked. By God, did it work. And they've managed to get the Irish government to give them license to take the cannibal oil back into the country. That's a success, that. Yeah, they've still got to travel to Holland, get the oil and come back. But at least they can take the oil in Ireland. That's Ava, young Ava Toomey there. So that's a significantly good for them. But again, I wonder about, you know, the role that Big Pharma might play in this. Some of you telling me that, look, you know, they want to patent their own forms of the oil. Paul Jackson tweets, Richie, maybe the oil that you can now buy is out there because it's crap. And I can see a few years' time, the mainstream media runs a story, man treats himself and dies. Now, Paul is referring to the oil that is on sale on the high street in a very well-known health food chain. He's not referring to oil that might be sold by people, you know, independently and stuff. But he makes a good point. Maybe that is the case, that it is crap, the oil that you buy on the high street. And, excuse me, so that it doesn't have any effect. And in the future, it can be claimed that a lot of people took cannabis oil and it didn't do them any good at all. That is a strong possibility, Paul. Right. That is pretty much it for the programme. A big disappointment that we didn't get Dr. Mark Circus on. I'm gutted about that. Mark has just tweeted me that we should do a show early. And we'll do that early next week. We'll do a pre-recorded programme. And we won't have that interference, hopefully. And then you'll get to hear him, because he's worthwhile. He's very worthwhile. Big shout out to Christine Celeste, who came on the programme in the first hour. Thank you, Christine. Thank you for listening. Look after yourselves and one another. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We'll talk again tomorrow, Wednesday, at 7 p.m. UK time. That's 7 p.m. UK time tomorrow, Wednesday. Until then, thanks to Simon for looking after the YouTube videos. Going to leave you with Radiohead and a Roy and a tongue-in-cheek High and Dry. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves. Bye. See you tomorrow. Sad spot of pieces, you just sit there wishing you could still